You're listening to David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast. Each week, you'll hear from me, David Olshanetsky. You may know me from theshitneyspears.com or my writing.
And me, Naledi Dure. I'm the wonderful co-host.
As we'll discuss everything young people should be talking about or are already talking about. Nothing is off limits or can be considered off topic. So, Naledi, tell me about those tweets I saw on your account. For listeners who aren't following us on social media, my Twitter is at writtenbydavid.
And at maybenaledi.
Okay, let me read one of these tweets out. Why is it that every single time a girl is having fun in the club or dancing and getting with whoever she wants and getting waved, she's, air quotes, moving mad?
Oh, no. Okay, so I went out, right? I went out for my friend's birthday on Saturday. I remember just getting lit, man. Sauce was flying about. I was on the gin. It was all good. And then next morning, like, an old friend of mine, like, messages me, like, I saw you dancing with these white guys, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just like, what is your problem? This guy exclusively, he's black, exclusively only dates white girls. So I'm just like, sir, black men can do whatever they want. And then as soon as a black girl does it, it's like an issue. And I'm just like, it's literally nothing. It's literally not a big deal. I don't understand why you're throwing shade at me. I was vexed that night. I was so vexed that night. I literally, it was like five different tweets of being like,
yeah, so they were all angry. If you see someone tweeting at 3 a.m., they're either thirsty or angry. There's no in between. You were like coming across slightly as both, though.
Oh, no, stop. What about you? What have you been up to?
Okay, so Halsey got back with her ex-man, so I think I'm getting back with my ex-man.
Wait, what? She's back with G-Eazy.
Yes.
Let's
slide over Mr. Greasy. But like, you just know, like, I literally am so, like, if I'm with someone, I'm, like, so infatuated with them from day one. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, never lets up. If anything, it builds and builds and builds. So when I'm over with someone, I need them to block me on every single platform, because otherwise I will literally not get over them. Like, I will still be stalking them. They will still be in my suggested, like, too real, but it's the truth, okay? About three of my exes, when we broke up, one of the first things I said was, oh, by the way, high key just blocked me on everything. And they think I'm being like a bad person, because they think, they're like, why are you being so harsh? Because I know a lot of people who have exes and they're just like BFF, still hang out, still same social circle. I can't do that. I need to pretend you never existed. So if they don't block me, I will still stalk them, and like, it's so extra, but it's just, I want to know what's going on.
Self-restraint, man.
I know. And so one of my exes was very outright, like, I will not do that. And the thing is, you know, like, tip here, you need to have the other person do it, because if you do it, like, there's a lot of people where I've been like, I'll just block them, I'll be the bigger person, I don't even have to tell them. And then, like, 2 months will go by, and then I'll unblock them, because I still want to see.
Nah, I'm not.
Do you know what I mean? Or, like, you'll have a Finsta, like, a secret Instagram account, which you, like, maybe post, like, mugshots or, like, fun party photos that you wouldn't put on your main account, and, like, that's the one you'll use to stalk. And so, like, me and him are talking again, and, like, we're on good terms, but, like, if it ended once, it's gonna end again. Relationships aren't for repeats, as Wendy Williams would say. Okay, later in the show, we have a great interview with Courtney Act, but first, we're going to go into some really topical news stories with a twist.
David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.
Spice, man. Levels upon pain.
Noah Centineo, okay, the reason you just heard the lady make that noise is because Noah Centineo is about, like, a quarter ethnic, but that's enough for her to feel like he's spicy.
He's paying. He's so beautiful, man. Like, that entire film, To All the Boys I've Ever Loved.
To All the Boys I Loved Before. Get it right.
Oh,
fake stan.
God. Sorry. I literally swooned throughout the entire thing. Like, could not stop swooning.
If you've not seen this movie, the trailer does not do it justice. Okay.
Literally.
To All the Boys I Loved Before is this sort of, people keep describing it as the start, but we have to remember, Love, Simon is currently the 9th highest earning at the box office, like, grossing film. I totally flubbed that, but whatever. Film of the year. And that's a teen gay rom-com. We have Crazy Rich Asians, which isn't about teenagers, but that's another rom-com. This rom-com resurgence has been happening for a while, but the biggest, like, even bigger than Love, Simon hype, I think, is To All the Boys I Loved Before. And okay, first of all, Noah Centineo, a snack with two C's.
Peng. Peng. P-E-N-G. Peng.
Which probably helps the movie. But, like, everything that he does is just like, you want someone to do that to you.
Exactly. Exactly.
If a boy did 1/90th of the things Noah Centineo does in that film, ring by spring, I will be married.
The bit that gets me is like...
Without spoiling the film, girls, watch it on Netflix. Boys, watch it on Netflix.
Okay. He says this one line where he's like, but I could write you notes. I was just like...
The thing is, you say that line as though the people, if you've listened, you're probably like, oh yeah, that is a cute line. There's people at home who've not seen this film, they're like, so he wrote her notes. And what about it?
It was honestly like, I literally like melted, panties in a pool. Like, honestly.
Girl, TMI.
Melted completely. It is a really, really good film. And that girl, what's her name?
Lana Condor. It's either Lana Condor or Laura Condor. That's like Hit us up, Condor.
That is literally the first time I've ever seen her in anything. And I'm just like, I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, so her like rise has been, she's been X-Men, which isn't a rom-com, but get it, girl, make that coin. And now she's in this. Something that's really interesting about this like return to teen rom-coms is that they're none of them are like just like how they used to be, like Jennifer Aniston or Drew Barrymore, you know, meeting random white guy in his first debut film. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, these are all so niche.
Mm.
You know, Nick Robinson and Kenyon Lonsdale, that as Simon and Bram in Love, Simon, they were so amazing, and that was a gay love story. And then when we go to Laura/Lana, I'm pretty sure it's Lana, Lana Condor, no, Centineo in, you know, To All the Boys I Loved Before, that's someone who is vaguely Latino looking and plays Latino in most movies that he does, and an Asian girl, and like an interracial relationship. There's so many things that are so much more niche, and I think part of the reason that these films are doing so well now is because we're seeing ourselves for the first time in these films, that, and we want to go support them, and on top of that, they're good!
Yeah, it's important. It's so important to have films like this. I can't even stress, because there are different relationships in real life. Like, we do have interracial relationships that aren't just not black and white. Like,
not every relationship is, you know, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore.
Literally, there are so many like beautiful types of relationships, and it's good to see him.
And that's not to say those old movies are bad.
Like, no,
so many of those
all,
are really good, but like, there's only so many times you can see the same story unfold. And the thing is, to be honest, a lot of these stories, like To All the Boys I Loved Before, Sierra Burgess is a Loser, all these films, they're pretty much the same Shakespeare stories and things like that that we've seen before.
Yeah.
But I think they feel fresh and funny again because, one, Generation Z is so different to Millennial, who is so different than Baby Boomer. But also, it's like, it feels different because it's just like a different small culture surrounding it.
Yeah.
Like Crazy Rich Asians, this sort of, you know, girl who doesn't have a lot of money, falling for a guy that has a lot of money, but it was a secret. That's not, I feel like I've seen that story before.
Yeah.
But the fact it's set in, you know, Singapore and it's surrounded by Asian culture, there's so much to it which we've not seen before.
Exactly.
So it shows how much this adds value to these movies we really like. So besides Noah Centineo being a snack and wanting to see this movie, do you think you've seen yourself as a black woman in any movies recently?
No. I don't think there's a film for me just yet. Maybe not films, but TV.
What TV?
Insecure, Issa Rae. I really relate to. I haven't seen.
I fully love if you would be like, so I've not seen Insecure, but I've seen the poster, so.
No, don't do this to me. I've seen a few episodes of Insecure and I really, really love the show, mainly because I super relate to Issa Rae and her like whole awkwardness, but then I also relate to her co-star, what's her name? She is like the strong female businesswoman who can't get no man.
Sounds like you.
Oh, God. The shade already being thrown. And then... I really relate to how like she like really struggles getting a man, and I'm just like, me too, sis. It happens to the best of us. But still, like, I think that show really is me. It actually is.
And it makes the thing is, Issa Rae is an incredible writer. It makes the experience better. But like, I've seen a lot of reviews of Love, Simon, and it felt like every review was written by a gay man. It felt like all like the Times, Guardian, whoever it was, would send out their writer that, like, you can relate to this movie, go review it. I want to hear from you guys. Send me a message at thisshittyspears.com, particularly if you're straight. I want to know if someone who didn't like Love, Simon, and not for homophobic reasons, because whilst you're listening to this, like, podcast, like, girl, pop off, we don't need your one stream. But I want to know someone that saw it and, you know, is super supportive of the community, but thought, this is a pretty shitty movie. I don't like the camera work. I don't like the soundtrack. I don't like the narrative. Because it'd be interesting to me, maybe... we're a bit biased because, you know, we're so excited to see our stories for the first time that it actually isn't a good movie.
Mm. Yeah, that's why I also like Dear White People as well, because in that show too, you have like a million different portrayals of black women there, like from the type that wear natural hair to the weave wearing type. So it's good. It is really good.
And that's not to say that these stereotype like sassy black girl character, or in my case, like the sassy gay friend, don't exist. I definitely know people like that. And there's probably small parts of that in me as well. But it's more that they've become such a caricature that's negative to see now. And that I think they should still exist to an extent, mm-hmm. but it's better when these shows have, you know, the sassy gay friend, but then also the other types of gay within that same show, which is why when a show has that one token black character or one token gay character, yeah. they put all those stereotypes in them because they need to fit everything into one person.
Yeah.
And we're tired of it. We're over it. Hollywood, it's your turn to change things up. Keep it going.
A Spotify original podcast.
Now, lady, do you think someone can be half supportive?
No, because I think you either need to be, like, fully in it or you're not in it at all.
Okay, the reason I ask that is because at the minute there's this big story going across social media and especially in the gay news sites about the Prime Minister of Australia. His name is Scott Morrison, and he was doing a radio interview, and during it he said that he loves all Australian people. And, you know, for context, you should know that at the end of last year, Australia did a referendum on gay marriage, and 61% of people voted that it should be legalized. It's still a process that's happening, but it will happen. Mm-hmm. So he's now currently in effect. He wasn't the prime minister at that time that referendum happened, but he is now as a result of it. And so he was like, I love all Australian people. Doesn't matter their race, sexuality, whatever. They're free to do whatever they want to do. And so straight after, the radio host goes, so how do you feel about gay conversion therapy? Because at the minute, only, you know, 14 states in the US, two Canadian provinces, small parts of Spain, also Argentina, Ecuador, Brazil, Fiji, Malta, Samoa, Switzerland, and Taiwan are the only countries that have it banned. You're familiar with what gay conversion therapy is.
Yeah, yeah, I know what it is.
For our listeners who don't know, gay conversion therapy, which is quite topical at the minute, there's, you know, films and books coming out about this topic. It's a program where, you know, some are religious camps, some are, you know, disguised as therapy camps where you come in and they believe that they can make you straight.
Yeah.
Some of them involve torture. They involve electroshock therapy. They involve like waterboarding or like being put like in an isolated room. Others just go into really in-depth, like almost culty therapy where they say, so why do you think your parents caused this and things like that?
It's crazy.
So in the UK, it's not banned either. The UK government said that, you know, they're working towards a ban. They said that this year in 2018. But it still hasn't happened in the UK either. But in Australia, where people really want this to happen, especially on the wave of this gay rights movement of, you know, gay marriage being legalized soon enough, for him to say, you know, it doesn't affect me, therefore it's not a big issue to me, and he's not going to address it.
It's actually crazy. Then that means, no, you don't love all people.
Exactly. To go from saying, you know, I love all people, all Australian people as well, and then saying basically that he's not going to protect all Australian people.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing is, as a politician, you're also supposed to, like, your job.
Exactly.
It is, you are supposed to also represent people that are stood down and trampled on in society.
So he voted against gay marriage. He wasn't in power at the time, but he was a politician. So, and well, it was a public-wide vote, so he was going to vote either way. But as a politician, he voted against gay marriage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's one of those things where if he understands the views of his nation are quite liberal, and on top of that, it's not like it was 51% to 49%. 61% is a big number.
Yeah.
When you think about with voting. So for him to be so against gay people, to vote against gay marriage, and now say, I love all people, but I also don't want to help them. It's just so ridiculous to me.
Maybe it's a marketing move. Maybe.
But he's already in power. There's no marketing behind it.
Then I don't understand then. Impeach him. Overthrow him. Get him out. Shove him down the toilet, man. He sucks. Do you actually think gay conversion therapy works?
So the thing is, when I was younger, like when I was probably 13, 14, I know a lot of gay people have said this to me. They sort of have that thing of like, oh, I wish I wasn't gay. And they talk about like, well, no one would choose to be gay. If you live, especially in a country or society where there's so much homophobia, there's so much hate crimes, why would you want to make your life more difficult? If anything, you want to make your life easier.
Yeah.
So to me, it's crazy. It's sort of like, can you imagine if someone, you're a black woman, imagine if someone said, I can take you to a conversion camp that will turn you into a white woman. Literally, like, that's just, like, you. That doesn't
nightmare.
Work. That doesn't work, though, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't.
And the thing is, the rules about these conversion camps is, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, there was a lot of, like I said, electroshock therapy. There was a lot of this physical abuse that happened. And all of that's illegal today, not just in these camps, but in general. You can't, because most of these people, by the way, are under 18.
Yeah.
You're sending children to this.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it's illegal, because you can't have a child in your care being abused. That's, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
But it's this emotional abuse as well, which isn't illegal. It's about, how can you tell someone basically to hate themselves?
Exactly.
You're teaching them that not only what they're doing is wrong, but you're also teaching them, don't worry, we can change.
So does that mean, like, you completely think no?
I completely think no. I think what I was saying, I don't know if I fully went into this, what I was saying earlier about being younger, when I was 13, 14, I remember having this thought about, like, I didn't really understand about the whole being born gay thing, but I thought, like, maybe it's because, like, I'm growing up at a time where, like, this is the most dead-ass, dumb-ass comment I'm gonna say. But I was like, there's so much, like, rights movements going on.
Yeah.
This is literally, like, Born This Way is on the charts, Glee is on TV, Modern mm-hmm. Family's on TV, mm-hmm. all these books, all these movies where, like, this is all coming out. And it's sort of like, maybe because I'm so hyper-aware of it, it's making me think that I can be this. And I thought, well, what do you think about, like, you know, in the rainforest? I was like, if they aren't listening to fucking Lady Gaga and they aren't watching Glee, like, maybe they don't have it as much as we do. Like, there probably are people that are gay, but, like, maybe just less widespread because they don't understand. And, like, that was the dead-ass, most dumb-ass comment I could think of at the time.
But I get it.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe because I'm, like, hyper-aware. Yeah. But that's a problematic comment. I know that's not true anymore.
Yeah.
But when I was 13, I thought I cracked the code. That's the guy of the season. I always get advice questions sent to me on theshitneyspears.com, and this is no different. This section is called From the Inbox because I'm pulling questions from my inbox. So if you have any questions you want to send, send them that way. I have a great question from a user called In a World of Boxed Water who asked us, I'm not the only gay girl in my school. I'm really lucky to be somewhere so inclusive and that I can be openly lesbian, but there's only one girl my type and she's such a fuck girl. The problem is I keep going back and I don't know why. I also don't know how to find a girl who doesn't go to my school. So I feel like this is a bit of a two-in-one question. Let's take it step by step. Now, lady, we both have dealt with some fuckboys. Obviously, a fuckgirl is probably, like, a little bit different, but they're basically
I love the term.
Yeah, because a girl can be as much of a fuck
exactly,
girl as
you
well.
Never
yeah.
hear it. And I'm like, man, I know so many of those girls. I just think, like, you know, when she said, like, she doesn't know why she keeps going back. I kind of feel like it's out of boredom. And also because she doesn't know anyone else. But also, maybe she low-key has feelings. Low-key.
Like a weekend song.
Legit.
Okay, we definitely need to define a fuck girl so that the listeners know for sure. A fuck girl, so if you know what a fuck boy is, it's definitely the same. But for someone who doesn't know at all the term, what is a fuck girl or a fuck boy?
A fuck boy is that kind of guy that always hits you up at night. Never hits you up in the day and he's always like, what are you saying? What are you doing?
Every boyfriend you've ever had. Too real.
Sensitive. And they're never serious. And they never text back on time. And they're probably being with other people at the same time. They will never, if you ever ask, what are we? Expect a read. And no reply.
Seen at 14:03.
Exactly. No reply. And then he will just skip over the question as if you've never even asked.
And the thing is, people like to like stereotype a fuckboy or a fuckgirl with a certain look. Like, a fuckgirl to me normally, like, if I stereotyped it, would be like an IG baddie.
Exactly.
Like, she definitely has some photos like popping that out. Somewhere in Mykonos.
With that skinny tee.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, I normally think like an oversized tee, but those tight jeans. Everything popping out. Buttons flying across Mykonos. And a fuckboy to me, like, if I stereotyped a look, again, it'd be a similar sort of, like, IG baddie, but, like, a male IG baddie.
Yeah.
Like, you know who's an IG baddie who I only just discovered? What's the name of that guy from Jurassic Park? He wears the glasses. I feel like he was also in Friends. Oh, my God. It's gonna kill me. Oh. He has a long name.
Joey? No. From Friends?
Jeff Goldblum.
Don't know what he looks like.
Jeff Goldblum is an IG baddie. If you're listening and you know who this is, Jeff Goldblum is a certified IG baddie.
Who was he in Friends?
He was like a guest star in one episode.
Oh, because okay. Of it doesn't matter was. Then because I didn't even like...
No, but he was in Jurassic Park and like uh-huh. some like disaster movies similar. But he's always popping like Moschino coats and a fitted look.
It's just shmoney, man.
Yes, Air Maxes. So to me, a fuckboy is like a sort of like male IG baddie.
Okay.
So like a young Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, God.
But the thing is, they can look like anything. You've got those secret ones.
Exactly. Like those, like, the indie type.
Yeah. Indie people are always fuckboys.
With the white fans, have you heard of Mac DeMarco? Have you listened to Taylor
Rex Park? Orange County?
Legit, man. Have you seen that meme page on Instagram?
Literally.
So
those mixtapes.
Accurate. Fucking accurate, mate.
Do you think you've ever been a bit of a fuck girl?
Never, man. I never have enough opportunity to do this. If I have a lot of mandem come towards me, of course, man, I'll be playing them all, finessing everything. I wish I could be a fuck girl. I'm too much of a soppy romantic. You know?
Same. I'm always like, oh yeah, I must have been like a fuck boy at some point. And maybe like from, the thing is, I always feel like fuck boys don't actually know that they're a fuck boy. And same with fuck girls. And that sort of goes into our question.
Yeah.
So the first part is she's such a fuck girl and our reader in A World of Boxed Water keeps going back.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you stop going back to your fuckboy? Because I feel like, in effect, going back to a fuck girl and going back to a fuckboy are no different.
I think you assess the situation, like, are you bored or could you potentially, like them? And if you do like them, you have to think, are my feelings going to get hurt? Can this progress into something else? And if not, then by all means, get rid. Because you could be, like, friends with them. But even then, staying friends with someone that you've been sleeping with is, like, risky. So I just say, like, really think about it and then put a plan into action. Either, like, don't see her anymore or, like, do something about it.
Something I really relate to and I've seen studies into is that gay relationships often start at a later age, and so our developments happen at a later age. So, you know, a lot of my straight friends, their first girlfriend or boyfriend, they got, like, 13, 12, 14. How old are you?
I still haven't had a man, you know.
Oh, girl. Liza Minnelli lies.
Still looking for my Zeus, man.
So, you know, like, my first serious relationship, I was 17. And all my other friends were probably, like, 14, 15, if you consider it serious.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the mistakes they make at 14, they no longer make at 17, if you're straight, because they made those mistakes at 14. And they were kids, and it was considered childish behavior, but they were kids, so it's fine. But the mistakes I made at 17, which they made at 14, makes me look so much more immature.
Yeah.
But it's not because I'm immature, it's because I didn't get to make those mistakes earlier.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's might be something that you, in A World of Boxed Water, are going through. And that's maybe why you're going back, because those people, when they had those first relationship at 14, 15, they often go back. And there's still probably people who are adults, I have straight friends, that often go back to the wrong person. But for us, I feel like I always see my gay friends a lot more where they go back to someone. And also that leads into the next part where you say, I don't know why I keep going back. You know, it might be, you said yourself, there's only one girl your type at your school.
Yeah.
So it's not like you've got the same pool. If a lady is on the tube and she's a fine man, and he's getting off the same stop, automatically you're going to think he's straight, right? I feel like you really rarely just see someone and automatically think, oh, I can ask them out.
Yeah.
But it's not the same for you in A World of Boxed Water. I doubt you can see a girl that you like on the tube. Like, we often have these fears, and with the amount of, like, rising homophobic hate crime stuff, you don't ask a girl out, and then she's like, oh, fuck off you, and then slur word, or, like, hit you, or do something crazy.
Fully.
So that's why you're going back. I'm going to, like, certify it there. You've said that she's the only girl that's your type. Obviously, that's why. I don't think you need to lower your standards and go to another girl. But, you know, you just have to accept the fact that maybe you're going to have to go down the Tinder route or, like, another, you know, female dating app route and just think, okay, I'm going to have to widen my circle. This can't just be a girl that goes to my school. First, I'll try my town. And then maybe I'll try the next town over. And then, like I always hear my, like, okay, so the last guy you, air quotes, didn't date, how far did you have to commute to see him?
I legit never commuted. He never invited me over, fuck boy. He never invited me over. He always came to my house.
Okay, but how long did it take him?
It took him like an hour, 45 minutes.
Girl. Okay, he lived that goes in my Kenning- point. Naledi's point sort of invalid my point, but Naledi has always and will always be an anomaly of a human being. So it's oftentimes there's these jokes about how, like, straight people on Tinder, like, if the person doesn't live within, like, 45, 50 minutes of them, we're not meeting up. Like,
really?
It just isn't. Yeah. And a lot of my straight friends, they've been like, oh, distance is such an issue. I'm like, where do they live? And they're like, oh, I'm in zone one and they're in zone six, like that type of distance.
Wow.
But meanwhile, like, the last guy I dated, I commuted door to door, like, 2 hours and 10 minutes.
That's effort, man. But
so you need to widen your circle in A World of Boxed Water. I know it's a track. I know it's a commute. But you say you're in school, and by the time you go to university, maybe in a major city, like the stereotypes, you will just, like, find so many more people.
And there is a female dating app. My friend has one. Is it called Her?
That's up. I was thinking of the
name.
Yeah,
there's a female dating app called Her. I think you should look at that as well.
Like Grindr for girls.
Yeah. Is it?
Basically.
Is it?
I think it's a little more datey than it is just hookup-y.
Yeah,
but
say, I'm shook.
Maybe you don't want a girlfriend anymore. Maybe you just want a pop. So yeah, so we've addressed what a fuck girl is. We've addressed why you're going back. And you also don't know how to find another girl who doesn't go to your school. So we sort of addressed her and Tinder, because you can do same sex on Tinder.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Badoo has same sex options. There's so many apps.
Yeah.
So that was hopefully a messy but tight answer for you in a world of boxed water. I hope you find a non-fuck girl girl. I hope she treats you right. I hope she makes you a Mac DeMarco Rex Orange County playlist.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for sending this question. If you have a question that you want us to answer in a messy but tight way, and you want to be a part of next week's From the Inbox, go to theshitneyspears.com, hit the ask button, send it to me, and make sure to include that you're okay with it being included in this Spotify original series and not just on my blog. But thank you so much on World's Boxed Water.
David's out for a good time, a Spotify original podcast.
Well, hey, I'm Alex Milson, and my coming out story isn't really too dramatic, to be honest. I told my mum about the fact I was gay when she was putting laundry away into the closet. Apt, really, because I was just coming out of it. And I told my dad when he told me some really big family news in a Mackey's car park. Coming out of school didn't really happen because I was outed as I moved from one school to the next. It was a shame that people talked about my sexuality so much, though I eventually began to embrace it, and I was glad to be able to talk about it as head boy in year 13. For example, I did an introductory assembly where I spoke about my sexuality for just a little bit to key stage 3 and 4. Then at the end, one boy in the school came up to me and asked if I could help him come out to his parents because he knew he was gay, but he was nervous, and it made me really, really happy that I was actually able to help. And so that's my story. One track in particular stands out specifically because the music video was the first time I saw a gay couple making out. It helped me reassure myself that it was okay to be gay, and to be quite honest with you, it was a bit of a bop. That song means a lot to me, and it's Latch by Disclosure featuring Sam Smith.
What a great story. Thank you so much to all my followers at Alex Milsom on Instagram for proudly doing that, and we'll be sure to add that to the associated Spotify playlist. Something really great about this show is that all the music mentioned, whether we love it or we prefer to pretend it never happened, can be streamed on our associated playlist called David's Bops and Bangers. Now, first of all, let's just clarify what a bop is and what a banger is. Okay, so I didn't really want to call this like the going out mix or something because, you know, every now and then I want to like get in my feelings and like put on a slow song. But not everyone wants that when they're going out. So the title is David's Bops and Bangers. So make sure to search that, follow it on Spotify. So like a bop is anything that like you can vibe to. It might be slower. It might be like a weekend track, weekend featuring Ariana, hopefully, something like that. And a banger is something like you got your life to in the club. Like you were in the bathroom and suddenly you don't need to go to the bathroom. You're back on the dance floor.
I got many of them.
Come through. So, you know, we feature tracks like the Call and Come Out track, which was Latch by Disclosure. It could be something like For Context, High Bitch by Bad Baby was in our earlier story. So, Nalady, you've got some great tracks. Come on, share them.
First track is Rem by Ariana Grande from her newest album. It's really sweet. And then Loser by AJ Tracy. Big Smoke by Tash Sultana, who's recently just came out with her album, and it's really good. Like, the entire, it's like, it's called Flow State, and it's just a really, like, it is a flowy, vibey album. And then my last two songs are both from Blood Orange's newest album. One is called Holy Will, and the other one is Out of Your League with Steve Lacy. This is the first album in 2 years by Blood Orange, you know, and it's actually, like, been worth the wait. It's honestly such, from beginning to end, it's a really, really reflective and like storytelling album. Devontae Haynes, who is Blood Orange, has said, "This album is an exploration into my own and many types of black depression, an honest look at the corners of black existence and the ongoing anxiety of queer and people of colour." I think it's really true. The album does do that. There's a lot of like snippets of this guy. I don't know who, and I should probably research who it is, but there is a person throughout the album just saying like, why is someone in our community always told we're doing too much? My New Year's resolution is to do too much. And I'm just like, come on, do it. Yeah. But I recommend it. The album's called Negro Swan.
My bops and bangers this week begin with East Side by Benny Blanco, Halsey, and Khalid. Khalid and Halsey are both queer, and it's so great to see them so like openly like happy with who they are and sharing their stories and doing so well in the charts. This song is so good. Benny Blanco has worked with so many amazing people like Rihanna. So like this is his first single, and this is an amazing start. It's just gonna get better from here. High Hopes by Panic at the Disco is the next song on my Bob's and Megas list. Brendan Urie, I just got to see Panic at the Disco perform at Reading Festival, and he is so good live. And he just did an interview where he came out as pansexual, so my crush on him feels a lot more justified. Someone once told me that I looked like him, and I didn't take it as a comment, but now that I have a crush on him, I do take it as a comment. But maybe that's like a vain thing. The next song on the list is Thomas Paul's Going Down. It's a new track. He is such an incredible writer. He's written for Kylie Minogue and plenty of other people. So check that track out. I know there's an Initial Talk remix coming out soon. Initial Talk are so good. They do like 80s vibes. The next song is a bop rather than a banger, because I probably won't hear this in the club, but you will hear this in my room when I'm in my feelings. It's Don't Let Me Be the Last to Know by Britney Spears. I had to pick a Britney track. This is a show associated with theshitneyspears.com, so I had to have something Britney on there. I probably will put something Britney on every week. I mean, don't put it past me. We also have Courtney Act's Ugly. We have an interview with Courtney Act coming up later. You literally have to listen to this track. She has so many bangers. You'll definitely hear this in a club. Maybe only a gay club, but still a club nonetheless. And also we have I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. Something that's really important to me is sharing songs that have incredible stories behind them, especially queer stories. So I'm Coming Out was written by Nile Rodgers after, you know, they were in the studio doing loads of sessions, could not come up with anything. She really wanted something inspirational and talking about her, you know, going solo. And so he went clubbing and he saw three different drag queens in one night that were all dressed as Diana Ross. And he sort of realized in that moment how much she means to the gay community and the trans community and just like how powerful she is as a figure. And so literally straight away he just thought of the phrase I'm coming out, went back to the studio, wrote out the whole song. And when they first played it for the record executives, they're like, we sort of get gay vibes from this. And all three of them that were in the studio at the same time were like, no, there's nothing about it. And then years later he came out with the real story behind it. So this song is so incredible. If you're gay, you've probably heard it at some point, and if you haven't, now's the perfect chance to go stream our playlist and follow it. All the bops and bangers on our playlist that you can stream are by either LGBTQ talent or allies of the community. You will not see a song on here by someone who's throwing around F slurs or is horrible to our community. This is David's Out for a Good Time, and we're here with my co-host Amy and also Shane Jenick.
Hi!
I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. I'm removing my clothing. I'm that excited.
Oh my god. I thought I'd have to wait to like the third date for that.
Girl.
I'm a lady. So yeah, so you just got to London really, but you've been here a million times.
I have. I've been back and forth this year a lot, mostly from London to Sydney, which is a really long journey. I went six times between Sydney and London from like leaving the Celebrity Big Brother house till like the end of May. And that is harrowing to do.
That jet lag though.
Oh, it's a lot. Mm. But I'm back in London. Been living in LA for 7 years. So I went home to LA and sort of just grabbed important things like that box of like my birth certificate, the thing that normally stays at home. So I've now officially moved to London, which is exciting.
You know, something that's really interesting to me, I should say, is that Amy's first experience of you, it was back when Celebrity Big Brother started.
It's a great story.
Amy, for all of our listeners should know, she's never seen an episode of Drag Race. She's seen some memes I might have sent her, but she's never seen a full, you know, 60 minutes on Netflix. Mm. She has not seen Celebrity Big Brother properly, but the day of the final was her birthday party. And so we were in her living room in her place with all of her friends. And I remember I bet money on you winning. And I actually told you the story in person at a meet and greet once, but it was in a club. It was about 4 a.m., so you have no recollection of this. And I remember it was the minute they announced who the men were going to be, before you actually went into the house, like when the tabloids were throwing names out. I bet £10 that you would win, and I won over £200.
Yes.
So at Amy's birthday party, I remember occasionally flipping in on my phone, checking, you know, who's left, who's just left, not seeing the interviews, just the names coming out. And then when it was the last 5 minutes, grabbing Amy's laptop, pausing Spotify, putting on the live stream for the episode, but her Wi-Fi was so bad, I could literally hear Emma Willis go, "So Big Brother winner is," and then it just cuts. And then the next moment it unpaused after about a minute was Anne Whittacombe smiling and you looking so shocked. So I thought it was like she had won and you were shocked. And it was a lot of emotions. I got a really good Instagram story of everyone screaming as soon as we cut
exactly
to...
Exactly, when everyone realized they won that you like, went mental.
Yeah, so we were probably as shocked as you were.
Yeah.
Aww. So how was that experience being locked away in a house?
It was actually surprisingly fun. The weird part is that I had actually forgotten that the outside world existed up until about day 10. And I felt really guilty when I remembered. Like, obviously, I knew there was cameras and there was people watching, but I genuinely didn't think about my family, my friends, anybody that I knew from the outside world for like 10 days. And we were sitting there talking and someone asked a question about family and I was like, oh my God, I forgot that I had a family. I'm like, just like that, I forgot. It would be horrible if you know, the aliens took over and shipped us off to some faraway land. I'd just be like, all right, here we are in a new world. I'm like, oh, wait, that was an old life that I once knew. And it was fun. I think it was mostly fun because I was there with Andrew. We were kind of like puppy dogs just running around having a great time. And once all of the boys left, it got a little bit harder. And yeah, it was just me and Anne and Amanda and Wayne and Jess and Shane. It was kind of like I'd lost my support network.
The demographics sort of skewed upwards.
It did, definitely.
Something that's really interesting to me, and I've heard recently, is that social media is so much more present today that in the past they might have missed their phone because they can't text their mom or dad or whatever, but you just don't have that constant swiping and tapping. Did you ever have like phantom phone just wanting to grab something?
Oddly, no. I thought that I would have. I've done a few Vipassana meditation retreats where like you go away for 10 days at a time with no reading, no writing, no phones, no talking, no communicating with other human beings. And it's like one of the most lovely experiences. And I think I really enjoyed not having a phone. I think that was probably what made it special is that you were with these, I can't remember how many, you know, 15 other people, 13 yeah, other people, and you just had to talk to them. Like, you couldn't distract yourself with anything, really. You could barely distract yourself with eating. Like, yeah, the normal life distractions were gone, so you just had to, like, sit and chat and make conversation, and it was actually really nice just connecting with humans.
Mm-hmm. My biggest fear being in, like, a Celebrity Big Brother house would probably be that something had gone on outside, like, a scandal involving me, like, nudes leaking or something crazy involving me, and obviously they can't tell you that as far as I'm aware, like, if it is some sort of issue like that. So I would be every day waking up in a panic of, today's the day. They've all come out. It's public.
Well, you should just post your nudes now.
Yes.
Then you won't have to worry about it later.
Yeah.
I was kind of worried. I think like the whole Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump, yeah, all of that was sort of
starting
then. And I was like, oh, what would, because they didn't have, I think it was like maybe the second live show. We're meant to have one every Tuesday and every Friday and it didn't happen. And I was like, oh, that's it. It's happened. North Korea's bombed America and World War III's begun. And we were always having these like crazy, like extreme crisis talks. We're like, well, what happens if, and like, well, you know, they can't broadcast television if, well, I shouldn't even say that out loud, actually. There's certain things, like crazy scenarios that we were running through because like your mind is just left to race in there and you just think about all these horrible things that could happen. Thankfully, none of them did. Although when Andrew came back, we were all talking and he said, oh, by the way, Jeremy Corbyn's now Prime Minister. And Anne Whittacombe nearly like fell off.
But it's such a big deal that you won. Like, I knew you were going to win. Like, I know I put the bet down, but I was like, I just
so
know.
Sure.
I was certain. There was not a single, like, person that could convince me otherwise. I just knew it was going to happen.
What made you so sure?
So it was a half and half thing. So half, I just knew as a person, like, because obviously I first saw you on season 6 of Drag Race, but I follow you on social media. I've seen you do other podcasts, YouTube shows. I've seen you do concerts. I know that you're super likable, super personable. I know Courtney act as a character to an extent, but I just know some of your story and some of your posts are you as Shane. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that people would like you in the house and probably wouldn't want to put you up for eviction. And then I also knew that on the outside world, the Drag Race fandom is so crazy and so big. Mm-hmm. I knew they would vote for you to win like presidency if they could. it's just, so I thought a combination of you being not really put up for eviction in the house with people then saving you if you were by any chance on the outside, I thought was just a surefire bet you're winning.
Well, thank you for your confidence. It is most appreciated. And apparently it was well informed.
Yeah.
I mean, he earned some good money from
it.
It all went that same birthday night. It was gone that same night.
Now, how much of that winning did you spend on voting, though?
Oh, so I actually only voted, I think, on
looking
that finale.
Looking for micro flinches and for like signs of lying here.
I think I only voted twice on that last night. Okay. It was only
at least you voted. You know, that's the important thing.
Because I was, I think, I only with the finale when it got down to it. Because I thought Anne would have gone so much earlier. Because there's been similar politicians on other shows that have gone so fast that I thought, oh, she's still here. It might happen. Was there any like thing in your head going, oh, I'm probably not going to win at this point?
Well, I remember it wasn't until the night before that I even thought that it was possible that I could win, because I was like, it's Year of the Woman. A woman should win. And then it was like me, it was Anne and Jess were the two women left. And I thought, well, Jess should win. And then when Jess went, I was like, oh, gosh, I have to win. Because although I'm not a woman, I would hope that I better represent the values of a woman in 2018 than Anne. And I just found it really frustrating and annoying that Anne doesn't support women's rights and women's equality in the workplace, or a woman's right to choose what happens to her body with regards to abortion and so many really important things that women have fought for. Anne just is kind of like, oh, it's all like the Me Too movement, describing that as snowflakery. I'm like, no, you can't just dismiss the sexual harassment and sexual abuse of women in industry for so long as saying, oh, they're just complaining and men have done horrible things to women and women have done horrible things to men. And I'm like, no, that's not what we're talking about, Anne. We're talking about a really important issue. And to just dismiss it like that, I think, is just insulting to women and to men as well. And it was just weird that, like, she wasn't able to have the empathy for other women who may have had different experiences to her own.
Have you
brought that down there? Too.
Have you had any conversations? Because I know you've seen like Maggie Oliver or Jess or Ashley, other people from the show after. Have you had any encounter with her since?
No, just on the right stuff. She what did she call something like a? She called me a broken record or something like that. But no, I haven't spoken to her. Don't know that I will. I kind of left the house feeling some odd sense of fondness for her, despite our very, very opposing views, and more than opposing views, you know, her legislation against my personal rights and most people's rights, really. But yeah, I know Ashley went and had like tea with her and wherever she lives. You know, I thought about it afterwards, and I feel like there's something about like Strictly and Big Brother that makes somebody like Anne like cuddly and likable, and you don't get to hear about the fact that, you know, she denies climate change, that she's against abortion, that she is pro-capital punishment, that there's all of these things that she represents, and we just kind of get to see like, oh, silly Anne rolling her eyes, and she becomes the pantomime dame in a way. And I don't know if I think that's a good thing to happen to that very, you know, far-right conservative viewpoint.
So you've won Big Brother now.
Yes.
You're literally doing so well. All of your live shows, like Under the Covers, for example, they all do so well and sell out every night. You're touring every country on the planet. What I want to know is, obviously, there is All Stars 4 through RuPaul's Drag Race, and what a lot of people are saying is you don't actually need it. Some people that go on the show, Kennedy Davenport on All Stars, so you said herself, I need this. I need to not only be on this, but win this, because she needs that newfound fandom support and the money and just all of that. Do you think at this point in your career, with a Channel 4 show coming out, winning Celebrity Big Brother, do you need to go back to Drag Race?
I mean, it'd be fun to be on All Stars, but I just wouldn't. I think I've entered 3 competition reality shows on 3 continents and I finally won one. I'm not going to jump back into the frying pan and be at the hands of, you know, the All-Stars editors. I think that I'm going to leave well enough alone. But, I mean, I loved being there. Bianca Adore, Darian, Ben, Milk, Laganja, Gia, all of these people from season 6, we all had so much fun together. And it really was a magical experience. And I've made lifelong friends. Bianca Adore, Darian, and I talk every day on a group text message. And, you know, when you see Drag Race girls all around the world at these gigs, you just have a great time because there's a commonality there. You understand. You went through something similar, and it's really fun. And I think being on All Stars would be fun, but yeah, I just would not do it.
The thing is, each time you've been on a reality show, your placements got that bit higher.
Well,
so
I can't win, though.
Courtney Act's Drag Race.
Can't get any higher
That's
than
the
that.
Next step, Courtney Act's Drag Race.
Well, the Courtney Act show on Channel 4 coming soon.
So tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like right after Big Brother, I had meetings with a bunch of different production companies and people, and we met with the people at Monkey, who used to do TFI Fridays here in the UK, which was a huge institution back in the day. And they asked me what I wanted to do, and I told them a bunch of things, and I was like, don't say variety show, like as if that's ever going to happen. And then right at the end of the meeting, they were like, is there anything else? And I'm like, I mean, I really love the Sonny and Cher show and like variety. And they were like, oh, tell us more about that. And so we had a chat, and I just thought I was being absurd I don't know, it just seemed like far too big a leap from Big Brother to Channel 4 show kind of thing. And it sort of unfolded. It's like a variety chat show, like dancers, opening number, Bob Mackie gowns.
Amazing.
Well, I'm going to work on that. Get on the Twitter and tweet Bob Mackie, see if he'll design something glamorous. But like last night, so I was thinking about this episode of the Sonny and Cher show where Elton John was on piano. I think it was Tina Turner, Bette Midler and Cher.
Oh, amazing.
Or maybe Tina wasn't there. Maybe it was just Bette and Cher. No, I think, anyway. It was like some iconic
A-list couple.
And they were all like in these fabulous silver Bob Mackie outfits. Like the set was made of balloons and mirror balls. And they were singing some song together that they don't normally sing. And not likening myself, Ollie or MNEK to Cher, Tina and Elton. But when I was at the Years and Years concert, I was chatting to Ollie and to MNEK. And I was like, God, imagine like the three of us, like Ollie bashing it out on the piano. Sorry, bashing out. That probably has another connotation, doesn't it? Ollie playing the piano and like us singing like a three-part something, something. Like taking people that you know, artists and actors and whomever, out of like talking about their latest book or talking about their latest song. And putting them into a more creative environment where you're doing like fun collaborations with music and performance and stuff like that. Like just that good old school variety TV, like 70s format, but in a 2018 package.
Amazing.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
One thing that's really interesting to me is obviously, you know, you've shared stories about hanging out with Paris Hilton and you were in the Power video with Little Mix. Mm-hmm. Who's the weirdest contact in your phone that you think you could text and be like, come to my show. I want you to lip sync to this song, or just I want to pop you in a Bob Mackie gown. Like, who's in there?
Oh, I have lots of strange names in my phone. Probably I don't have a name in my phone, but probably the coolest person I met is Grace Jones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was at the Standard in LA at this party, and I didn't know Grace Jones was in town. This was like before Drag Race, when I would just sort of like pull things from my wardrobe and try and like create a look for the night. And it was Christmas, and so I decided to go with a red theme, and I kind of wore this like very Grace Jones-esque sort of circle scarf red thing that was just kind of all pinned to my body and tied on. And then I was in the bathroom at the Standard and this guy was like, darling, I love your look. I'm Philip, the hat maker. And I was like, oh, it's Philip Tracy. And we started chatting and then we were walking back to, oh my God, I've only been gone from LA for 2 weeks and I've forgotten all of the names of the hotspots.
London is taking over.
Yeah, that really cool place that all the famous people stay, Chateau Marmont. And we were walking back there and he was like, let me call Grace and see if she's up. And I was like, oh my God, it's like 2 a.m. Like, leave the poor woman alone. She's like, darling, hello. Yes, I'm downstairs by the Christmas tree. And we went and sat down with Grace and just like hung out and kiki'd. And then she was like, they won't serve me any alcohol. I don't understand. I'm like, oh, it's 2 o'clock in LA. You can't buy alcohol. And she was like, just didn't understand. So we went up to the room and we just like kiki'd in Grace's hotel room. And there was this really convoluted story, which I'll try and tell briefly, where in the 90s, Grace Jones performed at Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. And she had this like black patent leather, like fancy designer coat from somebody, and it got snatched off the stage while during the show, and she like stopped the whole party, like, turn on the lights, I'm not leaving until I get the coat back. And she never got the coat back. And then she told the story this night, and then the next day I put on my Facebook, like, does anybody know the location of this coat? Long story short, somebody did, like 20 years later, and I just sort of forwarded their contact details to Grace's people. So I didn't actually follow up because I was like, the story's too good to get an unhappy ending. Yeah. I'm just going to pass the contact details on.
Well, similar thing happened to you with your shoe at New Year's Eve.
Oh my God, yes. My brand new shoe, my sparkly Louis Vuitton, right as I went to exit the stage, I went to kick a balloon. And my shoe flew off into the audience. And I was trying to sort of like, my shoe's down there. And everyone's like, we love you, Courtney. I'm like, no, I mean, thank you, but my shoe. And I just couldn't see it, couldn't find it. And then I think security were like checking bags as everyone was exiting. And they found my right shoe. But that shoe has since become cursed because my Under the Covers set is an inflatable mattress. And the other day, that shoe pierced the mattress during the middle of the show. it flew off and nearly hit the piano player in the head in another show. It just keeps, it's just that right shoe. It's because my left foot's my big foot. So my right foot is just a little bit loose and it tends to just fly off willy-nilly.
So I want to ask you this. Yeah. Music.
Music.
I can only listen to Ugly so many times before I need a new track.
Okay. Well, I'm currently in like limbo because I was planning my show for next year, which was going to be new music and sort of like more of a concert than a cabaret, but like a cabaret concert or a cabaret. And then with the Channel 4 show, I was like, well, I don't know what sort of music we're going to be writing for that. So I'm just sort of waiting to see right now. But they'll definitely, I definitely love music. I love doing music. It's just kind of finding the time and the place. Like, it's one thing to put music out. And it's not that I, you know, put it out and think it's going to be like a chart-topping success. It's more just because I love doing music and I love performing music on stage. And most of what I do is live performance on stage. So it's great to have my own originals. But yeah, I definitely next year want to do a whole bunch of new music.
Okay, you heard it here first. Yeah. Well, maybe not first, but you heard it here.
Maybe first, yeah.
So I know that a friend of mine, when she first saw Drag Race, one of her big things was, oh, it's so cool that I can then go see these people in either drag shows or, you know, they have big ensemble shows or scripted shows. You know, there's some where they do in San Francisco, like recreations of like, they do one with Katya and Trixie and it was...
Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Yeah, so they do like remakes and there's so many ways and opportunities to see them all around the world. But something really cool to me, especially with someone like you that's so musically gifted, is that you can literally sell out concert venues that people like Halsey or Taylor Swift, maybe not Taylor Swift yet, but you know, Billie Eilish, let's say, someone like that. And you know, like Trixie Mattel has sold out the O2 Brixton. So is it crazy to you see this massive jump?
It's insanely crazy. Like to be at, where were we, the Troxy in London. I mean, a good example is last year I performed at the Pizza Express in Birmingham, which was like a 100-seat room above the restaurant.
Yeah.
And this year I sold out the O2 Institute in Birmingham. And it's just like, it's those moments where you're just, I couldn't be more grateful and excited. And it's just kind of like that thing where you forget that your own life is caught up to the dream that you once dreamed and now you're kind of living it and you have to just like stop and pinch yourself and remember. And the cool thing is, I mean, my Under the Cover show, I wrote last year and planned last year before Big Brother. So this was like kind of created slightly bigger venues than the Pizza Express, but not like these big venues that I am doing. And so next year's show, you know, I want to have like live music, to have a live band that does the show and just kind of keep growing it every year.
Well, you heard it here. That's going to be a big tour. Yeah. Big tour. It's going to sell out Wembley Arena.
Wembley.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Shane.
Thank you.
Two of the Courtney Act tracks, Body Parts and Ugly, are on the associated Spotify playlist.
Yay.
So definitely listen to that. I am obsessed with Ugly. Amy more likes Body Parts. She loves that little funky disco beat.
The music video for Ugly is one of my favorite. It was one that I sort of concepted and co-directed, and it was based on a real life experience. Well, several real life experiences. It's that sort of like romance where the boy sort of falls in love with you but doesn't realize that I'm not a girl, and then you have to tell him, and then he sort of feels a bit hoodwinked but then comes around and then we fall in love.
And Courtney looks incredible in the video. She looks like a model. She looks like Linda Evangelista.
I stoned these tights myself.
Exactly. She could walk out here and sell the O2 Brixton and it would happen. There we go. So thank you so much. Be sure to download the associated Spotify playlist, which has Shane Jennings' tracks as Courtney Act, Body Parts, and Ugly, as well as the rest of Amy's picks, Naledi's suggestions, and mine. You can find us next week on Spotify discussing other great topics with hopefully a great guest. But for now, you can find me on Instagram at David Olshineski.
And me at Sleeping with Naledi.
But be sure to visit theshitneyspears.com to either give us your coming out story if you'd like to be a part of Call In Come Out, or if you'd like to be a part of From the Inbox, send us an advice question. We will hopefully give you a messy but tight answer. I've been the host of David's Out for a Good Time, David Olshineski.
And I've been Naledi, the good and trusty friend.
David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.